Welcome to Whitley on Wine with your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist Robert Whitley.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice, talk to me nice, you've got to wine me and dine me. Don't try to fool me, bejewel me, either amuse me or lose me. I'm getting hungry, peel me a grape.
Okay, we're back for another week of Whitley on Wine. Welcome, and we have a great show for the holidays. Today we're going to chat with Terry Adams, the winemaker at Sonoma Cutrer Winery, arguably one of the three or four best Chardonnay producers here in the United States. And that will be in the first half hour. In the second half hour, I will be joined by Sarah Belk King, Sally King, who writes for Wine Review Online, and she's a well-known food writer and cookbook author, and she's going to give us some recipes for the holidays. So without further ado, we'll get on to Terry. Terry, how are you? Welcome.
Hello.
Welcome.
How are you?
I'm excellent. What I like to do when I have a winemaker on is I like to talk a little bit in the beginning about how you got involved with wine. You know, people go off to college and they don't automatically say, well, I'm going to become a winemaker, mm-hmm. you know, unless you're Tim Mondavi or Mike Martini,
sure.
or kind of grew up in the family wine business or something like that. What brought you to wine, Terry?
I actually living in St. Helena brought me to wine.
You were in the middle of it.
I was in the middle of it. I was actually, I studied pre-med, so I had a broad-based biology background, mm-hmm. and I was actually running the heart-lung machine during open-heart surgery at the health center and sanitarium up above St. Helena, among other hospitals. I was trained at UCLA, and just had a desire to change my life and get closer to the earth, and I had been a home brewer since high school.
Mm-hmm. So was your family in the wine business growing up in St. Helena? There's a good bet that they could have been.
No. I was actually from Southern California.
Oh, okay.
But I just had a... It actually came to me, I believe. You know, I started with a harvest job at Chateau Souverain here in Sonoma County,
mm-hmm.
and got to know Bill Bonetti, and somehow made a good impression on him with my background and my interests. And
so
when he came to Sonoma Cutrer, I came about 2 months later before the first harvest.
So now, did you learn on the job, or did you go to Davis or one of the...
I learned on the job.
Wow.
You know, I had the chemistry, mm-hmm. and the biology and the microbiology, and I had a real good basis. Fortunately, I had a palate and put it all to good use.
You know, I find it very interesting. You know, Sonoma Cutrer, you do make a Pinot Noir, but you really are a Chardonnay house.
That's correct.
And that's so unusual here in the United States to have a winery that specializes in primarily one grape variety. Was that appealing to you in the beginning? With what was the vision? Because I know you were there kind of right at the start, mm-hmm. with Bill Bonetti. Mm-hmm. What was the vision of Sonoma Cutrer?
Well, it was an opportunity to focus on the fruit that we were doing the best with in terms of growing. We were growing a dozen different varieties, but Chardonnay was what we were getting recognition for.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was time to build a winery, the decision was to build a winery focused on doing just that and doing it as well as we could do it. So it seems rather obvious at this point. At the beginning, it was quite a departure, mm-hmm. from what was the norm.
What was the, I know that you have this, what you call the Grand Cru program, and,
mm-hmm.
and I understand you were very instrumental in getting it up and running and shepherding it through all these years, I guess almost 20 years now.
Mm-hmm.
But Grand Cru would imply that it's a Burgundian model, because in Burgundy you have Grand Cru vineyards and Premier Cru vineyards, and then, you know, unclassified vineyards, mm-hmm. and blah, blah, blah. And I would have to say that almost any reasonable person in the wine industry would look at Sonoma-Cutrer and look at your, for example, your Le Pierre vineyard and have to say, you know, if there's a Grand Cru Chardonnay vineyard in the United States, that's certainly one of them.
Well, I'm very pleased that you say that, and I agree with you completely. You know, we have established early on a rapport with several of the great Burgundy and white Burgundy producers, and mm-hmm. Bill Benetti, having grown up, you know, in Italy, northern Italy, definitely brought a European culture to the winemaking philosophy here. And it was definitely a part of the initial vision to focus on what Burgundy was all about, recognition of terroir, recognition of vineyards being the source. And really the work you do in the vineyard is what's reflected in the wine, and then you build a winery to take care of it and nurture what you're bringing in terms of fruit. So it's not a surprise to me. It was definitely the goal. You know, we set out to be recognized as an American Grand Cru, and I think the recognition I get for especially Le Pierre when I'm in Burgundy and showing that wine around a little bit is that they get it. They understand it. Mm-hmm. They appreciate it.
To me, you know, I could be all wet here, but to me the thing that distinguishes a great Chardonnay like Le Pierre and some of the vineyards that Nickel and Nickel has and Kistler is and makes them similar in my mind to these great vineyards in the Burgundy region, these great Chardonnay vineyards in the Côte de Beaune, is the structure of the wine. And it seems like you just always, these wines always have backbone and they always have the ability to age. And why is it that you can make wines like that out of Le Pierre and some of the other vintners in California, particularly in Sonoma County, can make great Chardonnays like that. But why can't everyone do it?
Oh, wow. Not everyone has those vineyards. I mean, it really comes
back to
the source.
I was setting you up for that.
Yeah, good job. No, I say it again and again. It really is about the vineyards. It's about not overworking the fruit as well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about timing of harvest. You know, a lot of us winemakers are looking for bigger, more mass, more concentration, more volume in the expression. And I, you know, still go back to that. We need good, firm acidity. We need freshness. We need that brightness. And the rest of it develops if we've taken mm-hmm. care of the vineyard properly.
Well, let's talk about your Chardonnays. You have basically the Le Pierre, you have the Cutrer vineyard. Mm-hmm. And could you tell us a little bit about the differences between the two vineyards and the two wines? And then you do your Russian River ranches, which on the other side of the break, we'll have a little more time. I want to talk about Russian River ranches because I have a theory
Good.
About it.
Good. Well, Le Pierre is a piece of, it's an ancient riverbed, a very rocky soil, volcanic. It's essentially part of the caldera of Sonoma Mountain that is degraded, broken down, and tumbled down the hill. So it's all of this rock that contributes this minerality to the structure and focus of that wine. The Cutrer, a little more sandy, sea bottom, sedimentary soils, give us a wine that, to me, is more phenolic, more tannic in its structure, and it's a rounder mouthfeel. And its fruit flavors are more typical of Russian River Valley as opposed to Le Pierre, which is very focused, lemon, lime, green apple.
Mm-hmm.
So there, for me, it's a wonderful opportunity to talk about terroir, to show the differences. People, you know, a group will prefer Le Pierre, prefer the Cutrer, but they understand that they represent the place they come from.
Yeah. Well, you know, Le Pierre to me always has that, you mentioned the minerality and it's a signature of that wine, but I also perceive, you mentioned lemon too, this kind of mm-hmm. either lemon custard or lemon cream, there's that underlying element there, and then it has other fruit flavors. You know, there's some pear and whatnot, but mm-hmm. but the minerality and then just the firmness of the acidity, I find remarkable that you're able to produce that year after year. It doesn't matter what the climatic conditions are. It seems like you can always deliver, you know, a consistent product mm-hmm. with the Les Pierres Vineyard. Hold that thought, Terry. Okay. I hear the music coming up. That means we have to take a little bit of a break now, but we'll be back. You're listening to Whitley on Wine on Sign On Radio, live and podcast anytime at signonradio.com.
Talk to me nice. You've got peel me a grape.
And now, back to Whitley on Wine.
Slowly.
With your host, nationally syndicated wine columnist, Robert Whitley.
We're back, and I'm chatting with Terry Adams, the winemaker at Sonoma-Cutrer. And if you haven't guessed it from the name, Sonoma-Cutrer is in Sonoma County. It's in the Russian River Valley. And before we went into the break, Terry, you were about to answer my question about Les Pierres and its consistency. And I'll set you up again. I'll tell you why I brought that up. Because there's so many parallels between what you do and the Burgundian model at that Premier Cru, Grand Cru level. And those Grand Cru vineyards, whether it's Corton Charlemagne or Montmaché, it seems like whether there's drought, whether there's rain, no matter what happens, those vineyards always come through.
I think that's why they're called Grand Crus.
Mm-hmm.
They have that ability. I have often thought if I could figure out exactly what was going on in these special places, I could be a millionaire. You know, it's just a special site, and we have smaller pieces in our other vineyards that produce exceptional wines year after year. I cannot really tell you why 12 feet away we get a different quality than mm-hmm. what we're standing on, but it is the case.
When did you first realize that Les Pierres was going to be really special the way it is?
Oh, I think we realized it the first year that Bill and I worked with it in 1981. It had received some recognition from some other producers even before that when they were working with fruit. I gave a presentation in 2006 at our Focus on Chardonnay Symposium mm-hmm. where I showed a 1985 Les Pierres, a 1992 Les Pierres, and 2002. And I talked about the initial planting being about 12 years old, Bill Bonetti, the winemaker. In 92, I was the new winemaker. We were replanting because of phylloxera with different rootstocks, different clonal material. Mm-hmm. Then in 2002, I was the old winemaker, and it was the replanted vineyard 12 years later. And there was continuity through all three of those wines.
Did you change clonal material, rootstock, that sort of thing? Well, obviously you changed rootstock.
Certainly, yes.
Yeah,
so that the soil speaks and it comes through. I do notice every vintage is different, but there's a common thread.
Like I said, that minerality, that firm acidity. You mentioned the freshness, and I'm not as versed over the years in the Cutrer vineyard. I've liked those wines. I agree with you. I think they're a little bit rounder. The one that really interests me is your Russian River ranches, and I'm going to have an odd reason. I think you'll think it's an odd reason for being interested in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you know, people think of it as your bottom tier, okay? Very, very good wine, but it's not Les Pierres, it's not Cutrer, it's your bottom tier.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a tendency, perhaps, to discount it a little bit. But I find this wine is, you don't make it like it's a bottom tier wine that's going to be fruity and ready to drink right now. That's a wine that actually gets much better with mm-hmm. age. It's much better if you decant it. I can tell everyone right now, if you decant that for 3 hours before you serve it, it's going to taste much better than when you pour it right out of the bottle. And so I'm curious what your philosophy about the Russian River Ranch's bottling is.
And it's a similar philosophy to Les Pierres and the Cutrer. We give them all the same attention to detail and the same focus.
But you don't charge as much money for it.
Yeah. But, we recognize that it doesn't quite have that same specialness, the magic, the structure, and the uniqueness. But it, you know, I often refer to it as our bread and butter wine. It's the wine that allows me to do these more special things, supports the program. It really is our main product and calling card. And it's, you know, it represents our partnership with the restaurant trade and is only available in restaurants largely and is really designed to go with foods, complement foods, freshen the palate, you know, and it's...
Do you ever try to encourage people, though, to lay it down for a year before they serve it?
Well, I encourage everyone to lay all of our wines down. I have no qualms, and I really appreciate that you recognize that. These wines will improve for 10 years.
Yeah.
And in special vintages, you know, more.
Well, you know, I mean, see,
cared for, right?
And I know that people get the, they order the Russian River Ranches in a restaurant, they drink it way too young. And I just think if they could have it like 2 or 3 years later, they would go, oh my goodness. You know, that wine is, you know, if there's so much more there than it shows when it's young. Which I think is very typical of really good white Burgundy.
Yeah, I keep repeating myself, but it's quality farming in the vineyards, and then it's not overworking the fruit in the winery to retain that freshness.
Yeah. Now tell us what the Grand Cru program is and how it originated. And, you know, I know it involves barrels and lots of different things.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was really a point when just as Bill Bonetti was about to retire in 1990, the end of the 80s.
And we should let everyone know he was the original winemaker.
He was my mentor and the founding winemaker here. We were, you know, we felt that we needed to reinvigorate the program. What could we do to improve quality across the board? And, of course, our trips to Burgundy were happening. We were studying that as the role model, and it became apparent that the quality of barrels was very important in the vineyards. We worked with denser spacings, smaller vines, you know, started exploring other clones that would maybe give us lower yields but more intensity. It did some things different in the cellar. We started using indigenous yeast, started experimenting with not fining, not filtering.
Yeah, and let's just hold you up there a second and explain to people who are listening who might not know what you mean by indigenous yeast. You're talking about wild yeast that are in the vineyard. You're not inoculating with a cultured yeast.
Right. Yeah. The natural flora that comes in on the grapes. And you know, I have to admit that I did quite a bit of work there, and now I still use primarily commercial yeast. They do give me that crisp cut that I'm looking for, but 15-20% of the wines will let go naturally.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a fresher, richer texture from those fermentations.
And what about your barrel treatment, your barrel regimen? Because, you know, one of the complaints that many people who like white Burgundy have about California Chardonnay in general, but not necessarily you and not Kistler and not some of the really top high-end Chardonnay producers, is that they're over-oaked. But you use good wood, you use oak. I mean, it's a major part of your program. So how do you keep your wines from being over-oaked?
Well, using barrels, you're right, is a definite part of the program. Barrel fermentation is key to sort of the mouthfeel and quality texture of our wines. But to me, that's what the oak contributes. I don't want the oaky flavors. I don't want a resinous finish. It's not about the wood addition. It's more about the subtlety that you get from a small oak fermenter. I look for wood that's more subtle. It's been well seasoned for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's very lightly toasted, medium toast, but for a long time, so that it gives like a bread crust component.
Yeah, a little brioche.
Just a little bit. Don't want a lot of toast or tar or those complexities. you know, still trying to make the fruit be the main theme, and the wood supports it. We've gone so far as to, we're buying 100 cubic meters of French oak each year through an agent and seasoning that in the French forest, having our coopers cooper that, just to guarantee that we're getting that finesse.
You know,
and elegance.
I think one thing I would tell people to look for, you know, if you open a bottle of Sonoma-Cutrere, whether it's the Russian River Ranches or the Cutrere Vineyard or the Lapierre, and you pour it into the glass, it's going to be yellow. It's not going to be dark going toward brown, which, you know, when you see that, you know that the wine is over-oaked. It's starting to become oxidized. And it's just, you know, its life is going to be very short. And, you know, even after 5 or 6 years, you don't get that with Sonoma-Cutrere.
Good comment. You know, the color should be light yellow with a little hint of green if it's right on, and still brilliant, not brassy, not gold.
Now, you've had a lot of experience tasting these wines at various stages of their evolution. And at various, you know, ages. So starting with Lapierre, what to you would be the optimum age if it's just sort of a normal vintage?
Well, you know, I usually answer that with, it depends on how you like your Chardonnay. Mm-hmm. If you like it young and bright and fruity, or you like it a little more mature, a little more texture, broader palate. For me, Lapierre, at about 5 years, is beginning to taste really nice. It's showing some development, some additional richness, body, mm-hmm. character. You know, if you let it go into 8 years, 10 years, you start to get like a older champagne, toasty quality. That,
mm-hmm. And
your reward for waiting.
It fleshes out more.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I tell people that Chardonnay and good white Burgundies will plump up and flesh out, and a lot of people don't believe me.
You know, most people don't have the proper storage
to do that. Yeah. What about the Cutrere? What age do you like to drink the Cutrere?
I like the Cutrere about 4 years. You know, it ages a little bit more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose all of the complexity and wonderful kind of broad palate of the Russian River Valley, all the tropical fruit characters.
Mm-hmm.
But it becomes more creamy. It gains kind of a custard to the finish. It does become smoother, a little more lush. So that's all good to me.
Yeah, and what about the Russian River Ranches?
Russian River just seems to continue to get broader, you know, more texture, but kind of maintains that fruit into about 5 years. And then I think there's a little dumb spot. And then I get emails saying, I just tasted your Russian River, found an old bottle, 10 years old, 13 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it was fabulous.
So I've had those experiences.
They go there.
I think there should be a law. Nobody should be allowed to drink it until it's about at least 4 years old.
Oh, I'm with you. I'll support you on that.
But you know, I know that the bean counters at the winery would probably like tear their hair out and say, get that wine out in the market.
This is true.
But you know, I think, you know, if you scout around and you go to restaurants that have a deep wine list, not a thin wine list, but a very deep wine list, you'll find some older vintages. Because they have so many selections, they don't sell through everything. So I would encourage people, if you find an older vintage of any one of those three Sonoma-Cutrere Chardonnays, that you try one. You try the oldest one you can find on the list, because I think you might be pleasantly surprised, almost even shocked, at the evolution of the wine.
Thank you very much for that. I agree with you completely. Oftentimes, if you ask, you might find that they have something that's not on the list that you could get that was older, too.
No, I never thought of that. That's
the odd bottle that they, yeah.
You know, the next time I'm up in your neck of the woods, I'll have to, you know, if I'm at some place like Dry Creek Kitchen or something like that, I may have to, or Cyrus. You got any, you know, anything in the back there that's not on the list?
Come and visit us here, Robert.
Definitely, I would do that. Anyway, I think we've just about run out of time here. Terry, I want to thank you. I know we're very close to the holidays, and everybody's anxious to get out of the winery and get home and be off for the next week or so. And it's been a great pleasure to chat with you. I've been a fan of your wines for a long, long time, and keep up the great work.
Well, thank you. Have a Merry Christmas, and appreciate everything you do for us.
Okay.
Good.
Ciao. Bye. Whitley on Wine will return following these messages.